listening to the Nerds Assemble podcast.
Welcome to episode 261 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
This episode, still under lockdown, staying home more mostly rather than staying alert, because fuck that shit. We were going to have a look at recent...
I've got too many energy drinks, so I'm trying to stay alert.
Oh, that's fair.
Staying alert at home?
I'm banned from caffeine at the moment due to a med that I've been switched back onto could give me insomnia, and we're currently keeping an eye out for me not getting insomnia, basically.
Ugh.
So that's fun. But anyway, BBC Four is in a tricky position in what is feeling suspiciously like a rehash of 5 years ago. But under different circumstances, the BBC suddenly finds itself needing cash, and there were rumours started circulating last week that maybe BBC Four might be for the chop in order for it to plug some money and then suddenly pivot to start targeting shows towards the 16 to, I don't know, 24, 30-year-old market again, more so than it has been after it axed BBC Three, which was its whole channel. I say axed BBC Three. Technically, BBC Three lives on in some kind of weird cyber life on BBC iPlayer, with the occasional show making its way to regular channels. However...
Yeah, now, with that, have we ever heard any numbers about how well BBC Three stuff does on iPlayer?
Not really. They've said something, they'll say when stuff's been popular, but they won't give actual numbers, really.
We call this doing a Netflix.
Yeah. But yeah, so, but they acknowledge that they keep losing market to the likes of Netflix. And it's just kind of like, okay, BBC, so they're having to deal with a weird situation at the moment in terms of funding, because this year they were meant to be scrapping free license fees for over 75s.
Yeah.
Which meant that, in theory, somehow that was going to help them generate some money by pursuing grannies for money. I don't see how that was going to work out for them. But anyway.
Granny Chase coming to BBC Three.
Because they've delayed doing that, that means they've got a funding shortfall of something like, I think it's something like 125 million at the moment.
Yeah.
Because of this. And
and also, you know, not to get too political about it, I know.
Yeah.
But basically, since the Tories came in, they've never hugely liked the BBC and the way they get coverage, so they have been squeezing them for all that it's worth.
Yeah.
I kind of
so
do feel,
you know.
I kind of do feel a little bit sorry for BBC, because they do get just basically shot at by both sides.
Yeah.
But
I mean, rightly certain circumstances.
Oh, yes. The license fee has been frozen since, was it 2010?
Mm.
And also there were things like the BBC World Service, which were formerly government funded. Because it was a way of, you know, it was the, you know, British soft power, you know, kind of idea. But David Cameron thought it would be a jolly good joke to have the BBC entirely fund it instead, which was, you know, one of the first squeezes.
Yeah.
But there are all kinds of various things, like, yeah, the, you know, the free licenses for over 75s, which the BBC, you know, the government has said, we, you know, they will stop funding. So,
yeah. And so basically, because of coronavirus and COVID-19, they've basically had to delay this destruction of the free license for over 75s. But because of having to delay it, that suddenly means they've got a shortfall in money they weren't planning for. And so now all of a sudden others think that, and this is where the rumour starts, is that they're looking to channels like BBC4 to make up some of that funding, where it's suspected that if they axed it and pushed either some of its content to BBC Two and what they kept elsewhere, and not all of it, obviously, to like just online on iPlayer, they could save something like 44 million from figures I was reading out of that, you know, 125 million shortfall. Of course, the great irony of BBC Four is that it is a channel mostly widely watched by people in an older demographic, mostly, who trends tell us, and my interactions with the public when I'm allowed to be near them, shows that they don't actually know how to use things really like iPlayer and use like online subscription services and the like. And I'm waiting for us to hear that BritBox is kind of failing in the water, because as we've said in previous episodes, when they first announced it, it was like the target demographic for that, like that's relying on a lot of technical skill from an older a lot of older demographics or to get going with that. I think you're expecting a bit much there. And again, this feels a bit like that, if they think that the audience that currently watches BBC4 mostly, which would be when it's actually broadcast over the air, are going to suddenly switch to viewing it on online. Okay, like I said, the odd show on BBC2. I mean, actually, in terms of the BBC channels at the moment, BBC2 has been quite neglected as a channel, it does feel a bit.
Yeah.
And it is kind of in a weird place at the moment, in a way that perhaps things like Channel 4, because Channel 4 makes a better comparison here actually than ITV in some ways, but it feels like its secondary channels have been suffering a bit more weirdly in terms of finding a niche voice and everything in various ways in comparison to Channel 4's various bits, because Channel 4's got, obviously it's got Channel 4, More 4, E4, For Music, and Film 4.
And the thing
and
is...
And it's online thing.
Yeah, I think Channel 4 has had a better idea of what they're going for.
With their various channels.
With their channels. Yeah. So, for example, please feel free to correct me here, but my perception as someone who channel surfs occasionally and, you know, has seen, you know, these channels, you know, the four channels.
Yeah.
Channel 4 is the, you know, obviously it's the general, you know, channel where they will put their stuff first. E4 is geared towards younger.
And I would say arguably probably stole a load of BBC Three's audience.
Yes.
When
yes,
it got
yes.
shuttered off broadcasting and went online only.
I think that is entirely, you know, right. And More 4 is kind of the Channel 4 viewer who might watch some of their Home Improvement and Location and, you know, slightly, you know, older, you know, demo.
Yeah, it's got a bit more of the sort of like history and sort of factual stuff on it in general as well.
Yeah, yeah. So basically it's the Time Team, a documentary channel. It's not like the documentary channel, but that's where they will be if, yeah. you know, if they, you know, they end up outside of the, you know, main channel for itself. Yeah.
Not quite as artsy as BBC Four, but
no.
close, I would say.
I basically think the biggest problem that the BBC has had is sticking with the numbers.
Yeah.
Whereas what I wanted to happen when they first started doing, you know, the extra channels, I wanted, you know, BBC One could be, you know, the main channel where they just, you know, they chuck everything that's, you know, it's their mainstream entertainment channel. I don't really watch BBC One. BBC Two has always been the sort of alternative, in a slightly indie, younger, perhaps demographic, you know, with some of their programming. But they've also been more niche. And when it came to 3 and 4, what they could have done is slightly, you know, I when they first launched, I saw BBC 3 and BBC 4 as almost tearing BBC 2 in half.
Mm.
So you could have, you know, the niche sort of, alt comedians that, you know, coming up, you know, stuff like that on, you know, almost, you know, the sort of BBC 3 and, you know, that kind of thing there. And then on BBC 4, you could have, you know, the documentary series and, you know, more foreign drama.
Yeah.
And I think by keeping the numbers, because remember, BBC 4 was originally launched as BBC Knowledge.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, God, that, yeah.
Yeah, that's going back a long time now. Yeah. And again, you know, the problem for BBC 4 has always been, what the hell is it?
Yeah, it has.
Because BBC 4 doesn't tell you anything, does it?
It's just.
But if you want more 4, then you go to the channel called More 4. And your E4 is, you know, a slightly younger sounding name.
Yeah, is a bit.
But yeah, it's that kind of thing. Whereas, you know, 3 and 4, you could have, you know, they could have capitalized on these things, but it just seems to have been because their idea of branding is let's have the numbers and then people know what the numbers mean, because they've probably gone to, you know, these, you know, research groups and said, you know, what do you think of when someone says BBC One and BBC Two? And it's like, no, just slightly rebrand, you know, spread things out a little bit more so you could have more targeted channels. But they've absolutely failed. And then I've just seen BBC Four have a lot of the arts and history programs that, you know, that I like. And then the rest of the time, it's repeats of music documentaries that they've made.
Mm.
And Top of the Pops. And it's just... Okay, you're repeating Top of the Pops. That's not what I envisioned ever appearing on.
I would say since probably around the time that BBC Three went, because when BBC Three was in trouble, in general, a lot of the stuff that weren't the main BBC arms were kind of getting kicked down a bit. I mean, don't keep in mind that stuff like, I think in the same couple of year period, BBC Six Music was in trouble as well, even though actually... it was actually quite popular and is one of the biggest digital stations in the country.
In fact, I recently heard that it was the one of the most, you know, listened to digital channels. And I think that's because they managed to, even though they stuck with, you know, with a number, it's kind of made more sense because you can say it's Six Music rather than just BBC Six. You know, Six Music, you know what you're getting, more or less. And then if you listen to it, it's like, yeah, okay, that makes more sense. But
yeah. Just to have a picture of just how often or when we last talked about BBC 3 and 4, and obviously now BBC 4 being in trouble. So that was episode 121 back in January 2015. Wow. So we've come round. And actually, in those 5 years, I get in a way where the BBC has to serve in a way almost everyone in the country in some degree in order for it to be the kind of public funded broadcaster that it is through stuff like the license fee. But at the same time, I know that they need to serve that market because you've got future license fee payers there as well. And if you can't convince them that they're worth paying for, then they're not going to take on licenses and not. And actually, you know, it's a demographic that's increasingly the younger one that isn't watching broadcast television. So it's a weird position because you've got like a group, a channel that is being served by a group that does still watch broadcast television. An age group they want to appeal to who's watching less broadcast television, but in theory it might interact with something like iPlayer more. But then the brand, the BBC brand, has, it seems, lost kind of credence or like a foothold with like the 16 to 30 something market. And it's just like, I just don't understand why they think it's a market worth pursuing, other than the fact that they think it's future license fee payers and they need to do something for them.
Yeah.
But then the way they've always tackled the youth market, as it were, or younger viewers, like, from any age. I mean, okay, CBeebies was under threat, I think. Was it at the end of last year, start of this year? Which was just crazy, because actually there's a lot of good stuff on there. Especially in the age of dodgy YouTube kids.
Yes.
With the terrible
weird algorithm-generated... in auto sing-alongs, I've seen.
Yeah.
I've read.
And we've done
a lot of some of those because I don't want to see any of them because frankly, not only am I not interested, but I do not trust the YouTube algorithm.
Yeah.
If any of those even get a sniff of my timeline, it's just oh god no.
So yeah, and CBBC, I don't know, man. Like the programming on that, when I do get a hint of what's going on, it doesn't look as creative as it did for like late 90s early noughts BBC Kids programming. I don't think they're taking as many risks as they used to in terms of storytelling and that, and yeah, like and that was when they had a bigger competition in a way from a more unified front, because that was at that point, that was when Sky and I suppose Virgin as well, and oh, what was that old was it NT, the old other TV subscription service that like died a death in the early
NTL.
Yeah, like subscription services to kids channels, like certainly with Sky, because they were the real threat, because they had Nickelodeon, Cartoon Network, Fox Kids, and
Disney
Sky and Disney. And Sky won with its in really good kids programming in the morning and on Saturdays. Like that, and that's just the ones I can remember, like really killer like kids content, and way more than the BBC was ever able to do, let alone BBC and ITV, like neither could keep up with that lot. And now that the market's more like in a time when the market's more fragmented, they're thinking they can be like a going back to the older demographic, which is actually the demographic that grew up in that market that they're now trying to kind of claw back a bit. It's like, you think you can somehow break through this fragmented market and be a unified voice for this younger audience while sacrificing this older audience that is watching your stuff. And then at the same time, it's kind of in this atmosphere where apparently I've seen trailers for it because they keep pushing it down your fucking throat when you try to watch stuff on iPlayer at the moment, but normal people, which is about, like, and is it like teens and love sort of thing? Which apparently the target demographic for that was again like the 16 to 24 year olds or something, but it's mostly been over 30s watching it. And it's a BBC Three thing on iPlayer. And it's just like, well.
Yeah.
Like, if the thing you thought was that your target market for that brand internally, which is BBC Three, and it's been watched by people older than that and what you consider the target audience for your brand, then I don't think you have almost any right in A, talking about age demographics at the moment, B, making freaking programming decisions based on age demographics that you have no proof that you're managing to reach at the moment at all, and that you should throw away another audience for the sake of apparently trying to reach it, when I just cannot see the BBC capable of capturing this much. Like, Paul and I are technically still in that younger market they're trying to target a bit, and it's just
technically,
and it's like
I'm taking advantage because for once I can mock.
Thank you. But it's just kind of like, well, I hardly watch it. I do pay license fee, but there's hardly any BBC stuff that I watch. I can't watch most of their news stuff because it's too messed up these days. Can't watch most of their dramas because actually they're just not my cup of tea. And then when they do genre stuff, too often they mess it up anyway. And sometimes it just feels like I pay the license fee for the opportunity to watch something like Doctor Who and then hate on it. Immensely. I was glad that the license fee, however, enabled us to have Charlie Brooker's Antiviral Wipe last week. And shows like The MASH Report. But they're not a. when I'm looking for something to watch randomly, most of the time it isn't anything on BBC. In fact, I'm more likely to go looking for something on All4's online player than I am on iPlayer.
I know that in so many ways I am not the demographic for when it comes to broadcast TV. I've said before, just about the only broadcast TV that I will sit down and watch are things like occasionally Newsnight or Running News.
Mm.
When it comes to everything else, hell, when I was a teenager, all those many decades ago, I had a VCR in my room and I would set things on timer. I've always been bad at the idea of sitting and watching something when it's on, because why would you?
When I started to really want to watch like actual dramas and stuff on TV, it was on at times of day that I couldn't watch stuff because I was still a teenager and I had a bedtime and I had to stick to it a bit or get in loads of trouble with my parents, and so I would set up a VCR to record stuff like Six Feet Under, which was on at God knows what o'clock on like Channel 4 once a week. It's just, I just don't get what they think, how they think they're gonna, like, there's no way they're going to suddenly make the kind of shows that I see kind of younger, like, you know, sort of fandom falling younger people in this country go for. Like they're not going to make the next Umbrella Academy, or they're not going to make the next, somebody throw a name or something youthful at me. Anything.
Youthful.
That's other than the Umbrella Academy, because I know that there's been a lot of younger fans for that.
What about the Vampire Diaries?
Things like the Expanse. Well, flipping Sex Education. There's no way they're going to make the equivalent of Sex Education. Mm. Like, they'd be so lucky to come up with the idea of something like Sex Education. That's a really good show, and actually has multi-generational appeal. Like, I've seen a lot of people liking that from big, wide audience, but then the BBC seems to be really intent on really narrow demographics, so it's like, eh.
That has been something that I've said before with a lot of American-produced TV, not necessarily when it comes to network, but they can do multi-layer family stuff, whereas the BBC will tend towards
one extreme or the other.
One or the other, and it's just, can you not just do something that's multi-layered, please? I find the whole thing frustrating. I think the only way you're going to be able to chase the youth demographic is by more or less throwing it open and saying, hey, if you're doing something on YouTube or whatever, or in like Twitch or streaming or something like that, get the BBC involved somehow in that and get people in. It's not going to come from inside the BBC.
Definitely not.
You're going to be able to, you're going to have to get people in, and what are the young ones doing these days?
Well, I think one of the things that Emily's kind of pointed out before is that younger people are generally able to tell when things aren't being genuine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, say, for example, advertising and whatnot.
Mm.
The older generation fall for, all this, nice, pleasant advertising or whatnot. Nice messages, we believe in such and such. That's why we're doing these things for the community. And younger people kind of see through that a lot easier.
They go, what's that smell?
Yeah.
And it does. And when you stop making stuff that's blatantly targeting the demographic, it's like...
Exactly. I mean, it reminds me a bit like Skins. Now, that started out with the first couple of seasons.
The first two seasons were freaking golden.
Yeah, because they were actually written and developed and whatnot by young people.
Well, they had at least young people in on the actual development teams and they're helping with advice and insights to make it realistic.
Yeah.
What an amazing idea.
And then, after that point, they kind of reverted back to the usual, 30-somethings thinking about what, teen life would be like.
Yeah.
and it just come off as far more ingenuine.
I mean, because when Skins 1 and 2 was out, like, we weren't that far removed from being in the age group that it was based on.
Yeah, yeah, I think we were, like, a couple of years older, but...
Yeah, and it was, like, and the stuff they were dealing with, it was like, oh, no, we had people dealing with that when we were in college, which is equivalent of sixth form, obviously, here. That shit does happen, and it does get crazy. And it was... Everyone related to each other in, like, a way that reflected what had happened with our own social groups. And it's just, and also it helped that for people like us, I mean, we're in the Southwest anyway, and Skins was set in Bristol and filmed in Bristol. So it's still the Southwest. It's quite similar in some ways, just a bit more built up. But yeah, then they stopped having that influence, and you could tell. You could tell, and it was, ugh.
I think it was really interesting, though, those first two seasons, because they were so good, couple of the actors from those have actually appeared in, you know, multi-million dollar films.
Yeah.
I mean, Nicholas Hoult, he was, you know, he's been in, like, loads of stuff. The guy that was in Slumdog Millionaire and Chappie as well, he was in the first couple of seasons. Yeah, even some of the others have, like, appeared in, like, stuff like Game of Thrones and stuff.
Yeah. Mind you, I feel like with Game of Thrones, like, every British... actor and actress with their soul ended up in there somewhere along the line.
Not to mention the guy that played Posh Kenneth. He's obviously in America now and, you know, he was in, like, Get Out and Black Panther and stuff. Mm. And yeah. Was it Get Out? Yeah, it was Get Out because the other one was Us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But going back to the BBC and its inability to now capture, like... When it launched BBC Three, it had a good thing going, and then it started hacking away at it and then disbanded it to the corners of iPlayer, occasionally allowing stuff like Fleabag to get out or something.
It just kind of escapes.
Yeah. Occasionally there are eruptions. But to sacrifice that BBC Four audience for the sake of cornering an audience that they haven't been able to corner whilst they've, in the last 5 years, anyway. Like, what, is 44 million quid really going to make a difference? Have they actually been making the most use of the BBC budget, BBC Three budget, rather, to actually properly really think about how they get to the demographic that would rather go and watch something on Netflix than BBC iPlayer anyway?
Yeah.
And at the moment as well, there seems to be, like, this thing with pushing, like, comedians more and more.
Oh, God, yeah.
You know, and it's kind of bizarre the way that they've basically been throwing money at, you know, Josh Widdicombe or... I can't remember his name, but... But, yeah, basically, like, loads of different, you know, kind of British people that have been on stuff like 8 out of 10 Cats and whatnot.
Or Mock the Week back
in the day.
Incidentally, I will never forgive the BBC for Michael McIntyre.
Oh, yeah. The BBC are partly responsible for the rise of Michael McIntyre.
Okay.
Massively so, in fact. It's bizarre.
I kind of like Michael McIntyre.
Small doses.
I've never got him.
Small doses.
Fair enough. I much prefer Jimmy Carr anyway.
But he's pretty much just Channel 4 brand only because nobody else will have him.
Saying that, Comedy Central on Sky as well. I think he was on Your Face or Mine. And a couple of other, like, you know, things on Sky that it just doesn't really suit him.
Actually, if you think about it, I'm not even sure if Sky's managed to really capture the youth market. Like, if you've got somebody who's over the age of 18 and has some money spare and enough to the extent where they could actually think about multiple subscription services, I can see them that they're playing sort of like a game of, like, dice between, like, Netflix, Amazon Prime, and now TV. Now, Amazon Prime, if they're in uni, they're going to probably have signed up for anyway just so they can get the student rate as it is. So now it's like Now TV, maybe. But at the same time, if they're spending time on these paid services, which, because they have predominantly got really well-made US and Canadian filmed content versus the British counterparts, which only occasionally make the same level of production value, which would be stuff like Killing Eve, definitely has the same similar level of production. But you look at most UK shows still, and from an aesthetic and story maturity, they very rarely fit what people come to expect from watching a lot of Netflix and Amazon and Now TV.
And that's I'll also point out that, of course, you know, Killing Eve was, if you if you notice when it starts up, it's a BBC America production.
Yeah. Mm. And it
shows. In other words, it wasn't even this BBC.
Yeah,
it's the American part. It's just
I mean, I suppose in a way, like people go on about stuff like, because Peaky Blinders is BBC though, technically, was it originally? Is it still BBC?
Yes.
Or did...
Yes.
Yeah. But, yeah, that's just, like, for Peaky Blinders, you still got the equivalent of about five or more, like, US shows in the same period that are of as good quality, if not better, most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, I get that's because, you know, it's a bigger country, there's more money being thrown about there and that, but then I still often feel like, over here, the big producers just don't... there's not enough quality control going on.
I think to a certain extent it's not just quality control, but also I suspect it's basically money that's being thrown at actors rather than the production.
It's quite possible.
You know, because you see the exact same actors over and over and over and over again. And you know, whatever drama is, you know, on.
Yeah, that is a definite issue.
And, you know, as we know with actors, basically, if they land a role that's, you know, X level of income, the next role has got to be at least a bit, little bit higher if it's for something like the BBC or, you know, not basically, you know, an indie art house film that they'll might kind of do it for free.
But then a lot of our actors and actresses have to go seek work in the States anyway because there's not enough mature work over here for them to do.
I was going to say that most of the, you know, the big name Brit actors, or you know, of the last 10-15 years, I think made them break in America.
Yeah.
Because basically, you know, if they're black, or, you know, basically, if you're not a slightly posh white guy, then there aren't the parts.
Well, it's not just that. So it's,
You know, go over and get a part in something like The Wire, and there are two big British actors currently big British actors who started off getting noticed in The Wire. You know, they didn't start off there, obviously, but you know, that was their launch point, and it's just it's sad. They only get seem to get the the big series when, when they've already made it in the States, because it's like, oh, you've got recognition. We're, we'll get you on board with this.
For those wondering who we're really specifically probably talking about here, be the case of Idris Elba with The Wire, and then obviously coming back to do the Luther.
Yes, I genuinely believe that he would never have even got a sniff of something like Luther if he hadn't been in The Wire.
I think Lenny James is also kind of becoming similar. Cause he went over to do like Walking Dead and stuff, but he's since been back with that one about the kidnapping. I can't remember.
Yeah,
exactly,
it's a Sky thing,
one,
isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's basically you've got got some cachet because you you've been in a US series. And it's so annoying to me that, you can frequently see these actors who are excellent, but they're given nothing to work with here.
I feel like part of the issue, if we're going to go and narrow it in on demographics that are sucking up a lot of the money in British TV production, and yet limiting the roles available to people in front of the camera and behind the camera, it would be the Daily Mail readers of this country.
Yeah.
Because almost most of the TV in this country that gets broadcast is actually tailored around that demographic.
And that's probably why I watch so very little.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, nowadays we usually stick to either streaming services like Amazon or Netflix or, you know, Now TV or Sky, as it were. But yeah,
yeah, but then it's mostly the US stuff on there.
Yeah, that's true. Or stuff like YouTube and whatnot.
We occasionally make forays when Doctor Who's on.
Yeah.
And I've been we finally decided, due to just everyone going on about it for so much for so long, we watched Fleabag in the last 6 months.
But even that was on iPlayer.
Yeah, that was on iPlayer. So
that is also one of the factors, the fact that basically younger people are more likely to go on the catch-up services to get, you know, to do stuff. But then they're not going to watch random drama X if they've not heard anything about it.
Yeah, and that's the thing, like, getting into some stuff is a real commitment. I would say that perhaps younger viewers are less likely to want to make the commitment to a new thing than perhaps actually older viewers, because they're not, because they're used to obviously actually having choice.
Yeah, and they've got so much choice, because it's not even like, oh, we have this set number of channels and what you stick on is what you watch. Instead, you have pretty much wall-to-wall, watch whatever you want in any order, however you want, when you want it. And yeah, people are going to turn around and say, I'm not sure whether it's going to be worth my time watching this or not. So let's keep on, you know, going.
Do you think here, you know, because, I'm considering, I'm saying about, you know, myself with, you know, if I compare to my middle sister-in-law, who, you know, I've said before, they're, you know, her and her family are very much, you know, an every person. They will watch, you know, broadcast stuff, and, you know, she watches her soaps, her husband watches, all the sports things and, you know, stuff like that. But most of the time, if they want to sit, you know, sit back and relax, they will, you know, buy a DVD or a Blu-ray or something. Mm. And I'm thinking, even with my mother, who's in her 70s, she's got a DVD library that would make most people green with envy. And she, you know, she's got Virgin TV and record stuff. And it, if, you know, she might watch something like Homes Under the Hammer when it's on, you know, broadcast in the morning, or in a breakfast TV, you know, when it's live. But everything else is stuff that she's either recorded or she's got on DVD. Now, the main breakdown that I've noticed seems to be, the younger you get, the less likely you're going to be to bother with physical media.
That's true.
So I'm willing to bet that the very demographic that the BBC is, you know, is trying to get, you know, with things like, you know, BBC Three, and they will be wanting to snare so they can also, you know, point to BBC Four content and, you know, the various other things at them. They're going to be wanting it streaming on demand with no time limit, or basically they won't bother. And it's something that has to, you know, there has to be chatter. And I think that is one of the major problems. One of the major problems, you know, we've already said that, you know, the Beeb have got a problem with, you know, they've got, you know, sort of middle managers who are trying to think out, you know, what they would watch as a teenager, which never works. The, you know, the whole problem is the BBC, a lot of the BBC, you know, youth content will come across as how do you do, fellow kids?
It is very, also very middle class.
Yeah, exactly. And they seriously need to, it's like, you know, I don't think, you know, the, you know, the shift to iPlayer was fundamentally a doomed idea. I think, you know, that part of the thing there, but maybe have more of a pronounced corner of iPlayer, which isn't going to have the rest of their shit.
Yeah.
There, you know, have something that's much more focused and get people in from the outside, for God's sake.
Mm.
And when it comes to what I think, you know, should have happened to BBC Four, it should have been something that was I would have liked to have seen lectures on there.
Yeah.
You know, science lectures. I know they occasionally had things like Shakespeare stage plays and, you know, various productions of that on. That is perfect for it. But for an idea of... Oh, and also, of course, one of their biggest successes in the last few years. I get the impression that they basically bought in Nordic crime drama as a bit of a cheap filler. And it ended up being exactly what a lot of people, including myself, wanted to see. You know, something that was, you know, why haven't we been watching this all this, you know, all the time? A lot of these, you know, drama series from outside. You know, we've got an entire bloody continent on our doorstep, and it's usually just ignored.
Foreign language, basically, like European kind of, not American or British, but actually getting outside everyone's comfort zones a bit.
Exactly. It's just, you know, that kind of thing would be perfect for a public broadcast network. And yet they only seemed to bother with it as a, well, we can, you know, this is on, like, you know, series 3, we'll buy series 1 and see how it goes. My God, it's successful. And then all of a sudden you see ITV and Sky, you know, buying them up.
Yeah.
Mm.
And yeah, I wonder, you know, with the stuff like Sky Arts, that seems to have stolen a lot of the focus of what BBC Four was trying to go for with its arts programming.
Wouldn't surprise me.
And yeah, I don't really watch Sky Arts, but yeah, it does seem to be the home for the kind of music documentaries that I've seen, you know, BBC Four do, and that, to be fair to BBC Four, they've done them well. But there's only so many times when I'm randomly, you know, skipping through, you know, the channels, I want to see yet another bloody documentary about, the Beach Boys, or, you know, what country music was like in the 1950s in the US, you know, all that kind of thing. It's just, you know, it's bad when you're skipping through and you go, oh yes, this is, you know, I've seen this before.
I mean, I think that's also part of an issue, is basically because you've got obviously the BBC channels based on kind of roughly age, but you've also got it based on roughly genre as well. So it's kind of like that there are going to be young people that, you know, are into documentaries, you know, that would like to kind of see what happened about like prog rock in the 70s or blah, blah, blah and whatnot. And you will have the opposite where, you know, you have like, I don't know, middle-aged to late, you know, maybe 50s or whatnot, that are, you know, kind of into like, you know, new trends and music and whatnot. You know, so it's not kind of mutually exclusive where you kind of have this, you know, kind of gap of 30 to 40s, they're interested in X, so let's put on X. It doesn't kind of work like that.
It's never worked for me. You know, when I was, you know, in my teens, it doesn't work for me now.
Mm.
So, yeah, it's just it's kind of if you look at the BBC radio channels, I've repeatedly heard that my supposed demographic should be pointing towards Radio 2.
Yeah, no.
And I do not listen to Radio 2. I listen to Six Music.
Same.
And that, it's you know, Six Music is kind of what BBC Four should have been when it comes to, you know, not music programming, but it's kind of, it should be a more sort of curious sensibility.
Yeah.
If that's the right way to put it. And, you know, you can have all sorts in there so long as it's interesting. And they, yeah, I don't think, if they ever had the money for it, I just don't think they've had the, you know, the money to execute that. So it's kind of self-perpetuating that, you know, they're looking at knocking it on the head. But again, as said, they were, you know, talking about knocking Six Music on the head, and look how successful that is now.
But I think the thing we've got here is the precedence of what happened to BBC Three, which, again, it's just so fucking ironic they want to cannibalise Four in order to try and get back 5 years too late, really, some of that BBC Three audience.
Yeah, it's like, it's a bit like, hey, I've just heard, right, that, you know, the young'uns these days, they like this thing called Gangnam Style. And then I think we should follow it up on a 4-part documentary series about the Harlem Shake.
Oh, God.
I think the ultimate thing
it's just, you know, in 2020, and it's just... No?
I think the ultimate thing that we need to realise is the fact that basically the people behind the decisions up at the top, they are of a certain demographic that just don't get what younger people want and what, you know...
Or just working class people want, you know? It's like...
They have a perspective and they don't really care to cater to outside that.
Have either of you seen W1A?
Sorry? It's a dabs of it over the years, yes. W1A.
Yeah.
The comedy series.
I get the feeling that is very accurate.
That's the feeling I got as well. There was one other thing, though. Because this year, director general for the BBC, new top boss, nobody knows who yet, is going to be stepping into the top spot in the coming months. And God knows what that means, because what is going to happen with the entire corporation then?
Well, I suppose it depends on who steps in.
Well, the question is whether or not how they feel about the Tory party more than anything. Because the BBC has become such a political ball game in of itself now. Kicked about. Well, I say kicked about, it's mostly just been kicked in the kidneys repeatedly by the Tory party.
You know what? Just for people that don't know, like, you know, people who are listening from the US that somehow got this far into the podcast, let's unpack that.
Well, the Conservative Party have been the ruling party of Great Britain for almost 10 years now. Really dislike the BBC most of the time, even though there is a huge chunk of their programming when it comes to current affairs that actually kind of doesn't challenge the Conservative Party that well, if at all, in terms of its track record, and tends to just accept whatever they come up with when they're being asked questions about serious things. I don't know. But then the Conservative Party still hates the BBC and still treats them like they aren't basically their mouthpiece. Like, I remember pre Tory rule and the Labour Party when they were in power for 12 years?
Yeah, yeah. I think 1997 to May 2010.
Yeah, so 12 and a bit years that they were in. The BBC weren't that scared to challenge them about stuff. But in the last 10 years, they've been well scared most of the time to challenge the ruling government.
The most insidious thing that I find is that the BBC will say, oh, you know, we challenge these things, and say, yeah, not on your, you know, basically not in your main bulletins.
Yeah, it'll be...
If you sit down and watch, you know...
It'll be the little niche,
you know, it's
bit.
Yeah, yeah. You know, if you sit down and watch in, like, the 6 o'clock or 9 o'clock news, it won't really be there. If you watch Newsnight...
Do you mean 10 o'clock news,
or watch one of their documentary series? Yeah. Oh, okay. But, yeah, if you watch some of their more specialised, you know, news and current affairs stuff, they will.
Like Panorama...
Panorama, which really got up the Tory and right wing on Twitter with the investigation into PPE
or personal protection
equipment, in the NHS, and it was, oh no, it's a conspiracy. It's like, oh my God, just because, you know, your government party is challenged, it doesn't make it a conspiracy, especially when it's right.
But anyway, basically, for the last 10 years, the BBC has been in this incredibly ridiculous political position that it shouldn't have to be in, but is, and it is also partly due to the fact that the kind of people that donate to the Tory party are also the kind of people that would stand to benefit if the BBC was no longer funded through a licence fee. That is, at the end of the day, really a tax, but it's a tax that actually delivers a lot when it works properly. If we can, I mean, just to, how much am I paying in licence fee a month? I can't remember now. Is it like £7 something?
Don't know.
It's, I think, something like £160 a year.
Yeah. So it's this. So it's about the cost of a Netflix and a bit a month. But I get radio. I do get local news, which also is actually a big issue, because there isn't much local, decent local news coverage anymore.
As an example of that, under a commercial broadcaster. Carlisle and Cumbria in general used to have its own ITV in the station. We no longer do. It's now run from, I think it's either Yorkshire or sort of Newcastle area. Or possibly Manchester. But it, basically, it's run from a different city, which is probably going on about 100 miles away. But they still have a camera that points to a Carlisle landmark so they can say it's local news.
But yeah, like the local news scene, especially with the demise of local newspapers, has got pretty dire. We can moan all we want about various bits of programming in terms of like on the national level, when it comes to the local level, they're actually still performing quite an essential service.
And just thinking there, several of the regional radio stations under the the BBC, the local BBC radio, the hours have been cut.
Yeah,
I think it was about a year or so ago where they cut the the daytime hours where you actually got local programming and local broadcast, and it kind of gets more centralized now, which I think is a great shame. But they're still doing more than most commercial operations because there's no profit in it.
So we can dig into the BBC as much as we want, but it's performing a service that nobody else is willing to do, to give people information that nobody else is willing to give, because there isn't a profit in it, unfortunately. And perhaps this doesn't need to be, but for some there does.
You could argue of as well that there's so much argument and whining about the BBC, partly because yes, we do all pay into it, but also partly because we give a shit.
Yeah.
I don't want a future where there isn't a BBC. Or it's split up. I don't think that would be a positive.
I don't want a situation where the BBC becomes a mere shadow of its former self and finds itself in a similar position to what PBS does in the United States.
Oh, God, no.
Well, there's some lovely programming that comes out of PBS stuff. They are severely underfunded for what they do.
Yeah, and it took me years to work out that, you would... watch American series and they, if it was a sitcom or something like that, they would, probably eventually have a telethon fundraiser episode of, some description where, because that's, that's kind of a shared experience. And, once again, here, no, we have occasional things for like a charity, like, comic relief.
Children
in need. Yeah. But we don't have it for our broadcasters. That just seems really weird.
Anyway,
Fund them.
Yeah, just fund them. And also, dear BBC, just like actually genuinely do some research into what people you're trying to maybe bring on board want. it feels really like you haven't, and you shouldn't dump audiences also whilst doing this.
Even better, just hire on people that will be able to tell you what you should be doing, and, you know, basically going from the demographics that you're kind of after, hire on that person. So that you're genuine about stuff.
You know, could you imagine how amazing it would be if, you know, young people would have the ability, you know, say in a gadget, to, you know, record video in a very high, you know, relative quality. And if, say, there was a, you know, at least one video service out there where they could just upload those videos and a prospective purchaser like the BBC could take a look at some people who, you know, who would be doing, you know, not necessarily the most popular, but interesting and well-made and curious things on, say, that public video service, which is supported by advertising, et cetera, et cetera. And they could pick and choose new talent from there.
I mean, does such a thing exist? It sounds like such a harebrained idea, Retroid.
Sounds crazy.
Oh, God.
It's just, please.
Imagine if somebody like the thingy he runs Philosophy Tube got picked up by the BBC.
Oh. Ollie Thorne.
Yeah.
Mm.
That'd be so cool.
It's like, come on, you know, they're already making, you know, and yes, there's Patreon, but I'm sure that there are a lot of really interesting, you know, people out there who would benefit from having, you know, the BBC name and backing and resources.
I mean, and if they don't do it for for British talent, at some point somebody like Netflix is going to, and then they'll lose their chance anyway.
Yeah, I mean, that does actually remind me that I've seen at least one guy from Vine that has kind of started turning up in, you know, kind of feature films and whatnot. It's kind of weird.
By Netflix.
Yeah,
Netflix.
To basically go from like, oh, there's this guy that does funny stuff on Vine to, what the hell? This is, wow.
He's
this
in a film.
This is like a, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, does actually remind me that Freddie Wong was actually once in an episode of Chuck as well.
Cool. Okay, I'm sorry, guys, but I think that actually is all we've got time for this week.
I think we've mined that scene, haven't we?
We've mined that scene. Basically, BBC can do better. The Conservatives can go and jog on. And, yeah, we're still going to stream content, mostly. Sorry. Not sorry.
Yeah.
But I'll still be paying my licence fee whilst I'm doing it.
But, I mean, I think they've got to realise just how people find content as well. Because, I mean, it's all well and good, you know, having it, like, there randomly on the website. But if people don't know anything about it, other than, like, a small blurb that somebody's written. Yeah.
They do very few launch campaigns across, certainly, social media for new stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Or the only advertising they do is, like, in, like, I don't know, like, buses or the underground in London. And it's like, well, that's just London.
Well, they rely too heavily on word of mouth, and it kind of doesn't fizzles. Happen.
Fizzles.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's a bit like if you try to do a, you know, a viral tweet, it will fall flat on its arse. But if you do something offhand, There are very few people who have the talent to be able to, you know, pinpoint something. And it's like, please, you know, people with talent are more visible than ever before.
Yeah. Okay, that is all we've got time for this week. So, it is good night from...
It's good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
It's good night from me, Paul Blurt, and I'm on Twitter's at Paul Blurt.
And it's good night from me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter at EMKingMA. You can find notes for this episode over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. We're also on Twitter and Instagram at Nerds Podcast. We're on Facebook as Nerds Assemble Podcast. You can listen to episodes via Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and probably a couple of places I don't even know about. That's it. Except for, one public service announcement. We are slowly moving the podcast away from Tumblr, like actual action. I know I've said this many times over the years, in fact, due to how we were doing stuff. It might have been all the way back around episode 134. We might have been saying something about this. Ooh. But we are genuinely making moves to switch where we do things. Like the URL at the end of the day will still be the same, and we'll have to do some crazy shit with our RSS feeds. But if you notice any interruptions in servers and stuff going on, that's probably us slowly moving stuff to new homes. We'll try to put announcements out on our social media when something's definitely maybe going to go down for a little bit.
Including rebranding.
And we might actually get some rebranding going on as well, yeah. Because we've been with our current look for about 5 years, apparently. So, yeah. That's it. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Watch our stuff.
How do you do our stuff, kids?
Say what?
How do you do, kids?
Radical.
Whoa, cowabunga!
Dude.
Hey, that's still being used.
Hey, don't have a cow.
Oh, man.